The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I believe we have a late booking. Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post will join us shortly to help us talk about the Juan Soto signing with the Mets and more.
The Juan Soto deal surprised me. Not that the Mets got him, but I was expecting something. Because these are the reports you were hearing. You were hearing, you know, 550 to like 600 million, maybe 650. And when I saw the numbers, 15 years, 765 million, no deferrals, and it's got an opt out after 5 years, I thought, OMG.
Yep.
I'm not surprised that Steve Cohen got him. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of surprised at the numbers. And, you know, this is the biggest contract in the history of sports.
All right, joining us to talk about that is Barry Zwerluga, sports columnist at the Washington Post. First, Barry, thanks for joining us on short notice. It is appreciated.
Yes, sir.
No problem. Happy to do it, guys.
Thank you very much.
So how taken aback were you by the numbers? Not really by the signing. We knew the Mets were one of the finalists to nab Juan Soto, but were you surprised that there was no deferred money and that the number reached $765 million?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be hard to say you weren't kind of blown away by that. That's an AAV of $51 million a year. And with Ohtani, when the numbers got really high, you're thinking, well, you're buying two players. You're buying a pitcher eventually and a hitter. This guy is, I mean, I believe in his talent, and I think he is the best free agent in a 20-year period in the non-Ohtani division. But he's going to be a DH pretty soon. So you're paying this guy $51 million a year to be, you know, one of the best hitters in the game, if not the best hitter in the game. We could have that debate another time. But, man, teach your kids to play baseball because the money is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, the opt-out will only be used if he thinks he can get more than the remainder of the deal. And you know, if you have an owner like Steve Cohen who literally does not care, I mean, this is almost like the equivalent of the Saudis and LIV Golf. Like, they don't care what the money is.
Right.
Like, he is breaking the game financially. And if you're in the division in the NL East, and you're trying to compete financially with the Mets, you're
dead.
You're going to have to, you're going to have to find other ways. You're going to have to outthink, outsmart, because you're not going to outspend.
Yeah. And Barry, when you bring up the 15 year term, like, I'm guessing Steve Cohen he may have thought about it, but I guess it doesn't really affect him, or else he wouldn't put the deal out there. Like, the last 4 or 5 years of this deal, they're not going to look as great as obviously the first 8 to 10 when Juan Soto is in his prime. And we see this all the time when these guys get these 12, 13, 15-year deals. Like, those last 3 or 4 years especially, the play just tails off as they get older.
Yeah, it's
only natural that it happens.
Yeah, but I mean, if you win 2 or 3 World Series in the first 8 years, does that matter?
It's
you
worth
know,
it, yeah.
And I think, I mean, that's what he's banking on, for sure. And I think, you know, one thing that's different about Soto, and this has been true, you know, as he was heading into free agency, is he's very much like Harper because he came up at 19. So free agency, he just turned 26 in October. The 15-year deal doesn't start when he's 30. It starts when he's 26. And that really, really, really matters. So his clock got ticking earlier. And I do think, Cakes, that, you know, Cohen's not doing this and just saying we're done. I mean, he's got an expensive player in Lindor at shortstop. But he can do, and I assume will do, other things. This is very much a day that's about Juan Soto and getting that record deal. But I think it's also a day that's about Steve Cohen and the Mets. And it's you know, think about a Yankee hitting in front of Aaron Judge, having the season that he did, going to the World Series, and deciding, you know what, I'd rather play for the Mets, because there has to have been some sort of articulation from Cohen that this is how we're going to build a winner here. Because the Yankees were very, I don't know this myself, but from reports, were very close financially and terms. So he has to have been able to articulate this, that we're just going to throw our weight around and we're going to win, you know, not one, not two, several World Series with you leading the way.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But maybe he and Scott Boras just said, all right, the Yankees deal is worth, you know, a few million dollars less per year. Maybe they didn't agree on this opt-out, who knows? And maybe Boras and Soto just went, we're just going to go for the biggest deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely possible. And I mean, I would say absolutely probable for sure. And I also, you know, there's a lot of Boras conspiracy theorists and, you know, stuff that I think gets thrown around about him that I don't necessarily agree with. But I will say in this kind of situation, Scott knows the landscape. He knows the needs of every team, and he knows his client lists and where everybody would fit. So right now, by signing Juan Soto back to the Mets, Boras probably knows, okay, they're not going to bring Pete Alonso back, where he's trying to play this chess game that gets each of his clients the best deal, the most money. But he's also like thinking, well, if Alonso's not going back there, who needs a first baseman? And strategizing that way, I think that's a Boras conspiracy theory that I would buy, that each deal he does is not just fitting that player's needs. It's his client list and where are the potential landing spots that I can max out the other guys as well.
Now, when it comes to the Nats, I mean, the Nats are in an extremely difficult division, and it just got better. Okay, so now you're seeing Juan Soto, you know, 12 times a year, as opposed to just seeing him a couple times a year when he was in the American League. But when you look at what the Nats have to do, because the Phillies are going to spend money, right? The Braves don't spend as much, but they've got great players, great farm system. Marlins, who knows? But now the Mets, you know that Cohen's going to spend a bunch of money. This just makes it tougher for the Nats to battle within the division. What do you think the Nats have to do, especially this offseason? They got to spend some money somewhere, and maybe it's a Pete Alonso type. I don't know if they'll go after Bregman because he's probably going to cost a lot of money, but they got to spend some money somewhere to show their fans, hey, we are for real. Now we're not just relying on our, you know, best prospects. We got to put some free agents out there.
I wrote that for this morning, that it's, you know, it's malpractice at this point not to spend something, because the core that they have is not getting paid anything. Their highest paid player is either going to be Luis García or Keibert Ruiz. Ruiz is already locked in because he signed a long-term deal, so I think he's $5.35 million or something like that. Okay. García, if his arbitration number could come in at like 5.5. So the point is, they're paying no veterans even $10 million for the year. This is the equivalent of having a quarterback on a rookie deal, having a core of guys that you believe in that are all either pre-arbitration or early in their arbitration years, so that they don't cost money. And to not surround that core with players that do cost something, and I'm not saying $765 million, but what would this roster look like if you went after a Corbin Burns or a Max Fried at the front of the rotation? What would it look like? And I'm not a big Alonzo backer because I feel like he's probably going to decline,
yeah.
But they need a first baseman. I don't think they need a third baseman because internally they think Brady House is going to come up this coming year at some point, and that will solve that position. They need first baseman DH power somewhere yeah. in there. Is that a Christian Walker from Arizona, who's not a flashy name but plays great defense and it would hit you 30 bombs? Like, where and how can they spend? Because I will be apoplectic if they go into next year with the 28th ranked payroll, because there's a time to do that, but that time has passed. Like, before the kids were ready, you don't go out just to spend. Now the kids are, Cruz is going to be there. Wood is going to be there. They've got to get Abrams back from whatever happened at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They've got the players that don't cost money. Please, please, please surround them with some that do cost money so that you can have a chance to compete in the division that you just described.
So, Barry, this is obviously great news for the Mets to land Juan Soto. But, like, if you're a baseball fan in Detroit or Miami or Tampa Bay, I mean, You have no hopes of competing, at least salary-wise, with teams like those in the major markets, the Yankees, the Mets,
Dodgers.
The Red Sox, the Dodgers. Like, what do those fans do? What's going to keep them coming out to the ballpark when they look at these teams with $350 million payrolls coming in, and they have payrolls at like $75 or $80
million? Yeah, it's hard. It's a little disheartening, and it gets back to that, you know, there certainly are tiers in the sport, and is it tiers that you just feel like, you're just a farm system for those handful of teams that can spend all that money. I do wonder what the end point for that right now, the Dodgers and the Mets, who are the financial behemoths in the sport. I mean, you know, the biggest deal before Soto was the world champion Dodgers signing Blake Snell to 5 years, $182 million deal. I think it was just, you know, strengthening a strength because they have no weaknesses in LA. I think, Cakes, you have to get to a position where the Tigers are right now, a competitive team built on players, as I previously described, in those 0 to 6 years pre-free agency deals, because you can manage a payroll and fill in not with the biggest, splashiest veterans, but fill in with veterans and have a situation where you're competitive for a stretch. But does that stretch end with your best players departing for one of four or five locations? It sure feels that way today, because if the Yankees can't compete or can't land one of their own, what does that say about the rest of the sport that can't compete with the Yankees? It's a weird feeling too. I think, like, the Mets have always been the second team in that town, obviously, mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were quirky and they lost all those games as an expansion team, and they won with the Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry teams in the 80s that were, you know, not underdogs, but not overdogs either. Is their identity just completely different this morning because they out-Yankeed the Yankees? That's just a weird feeling as a Met fan, I would think,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, there's also pressure from within because, you know, they haven't been to a World Series in 10 years. They haven't won one in, what, since 86?
Since 86, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there's certainly pressure for Cohen and that organization to get back quickly. But so getting back to the Nats, you mentioned some of those names that are still unsigned. I got to think that they're going to start trickling in soon here in the next couple weeks. But when do you think it'll happen for the Nats? If they do go out and sign, I don't know if it's going to be a Burns or a Bregman or Alonzo or Flaherty. I don't know, whoever it would be. Do you think it's going to happen in the next couple days? Do you think it's going to take a couple weeks?
I will say this, like, Mike Rizzo, in his history, when he's had needs and he's had permission to go get people, he's aggressive about doing it. I mean, if you remember the offseason going into 2019, they signed Patrick Corbin before winter meetings even started. They traded for Yan Gomes before winter meetings started. Like, they got on it fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain. Here's the problem I have, and I haven't done all the reporting I could on this, and I'll hope to do some this week, but I don't know what they're permitted to sign. Like, I don't know what their budget is, what they've been told their budget is. And so if they've been told, hey, no, you know, no players at X dollar amount, then do they really have to wait for the market to kind of fall out and come back to them and pick over the scrap heap? I certainly hope that's not what the case is, but I do know that, you know, the tenor over there over the course of the, you know, the latter part of the season and into the early part of the off season was, we got to sell tickets before we can really go out and pursue players, which I just argue is backwards. Please, please, please pursue players so that people have reason to buy tickets. And you show us that not only has the Soto trade turned out to be the right thing and other trades have turned out to be the right thing, but now you're committed to winning in a way that you were pre-pandemic. We just haven't seen that yet, and therefore we don't know what the learners are going to do. And then throw in the idea that Ted Leonsis was going into the offseason saying, hey, we still want to make a competitive bid for that team. Like, where are we with that? I think there's tons and tons and tons of interesting questions about the Nats right now.
Joined by Barry Zwerluga, sports columnist at the Washington Post. Let's hit on the Commanders before we have to run, Barry. So the vibes are good. Coming off the bye week, they snapped the losing streak. Now they get to go to New Orleans. So Jaden's basically making a faux homecoming back to where he started in college. Marshawn Lattimore should make his debut in a Commanders uniform against his former team. Oh, and you also get to face a backup quarterback because Derek Carr got injured in yesterday's game. So everything seems to be aligning coming out of the bye week for the Commanders.
Does it sound too good to be true, though?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it does. Like, I think that was really a get-right game against Tennessee, and they got right in the emphatic fashion. I think that matters. Like, you know, when they were better than Carolina, when they were better than the Browns early in the season, they just took it to them and took care of business. And I think that was the concern coming out of the Cowboys game was like, wait a second, you're better than that team. How did you allow that to happen? So I think that was a correction for them as a group. I also think that if you know, they're not looking down the schedule, but I certainly can do that. Like, Atlanta looks like a mess now. Like, they it seems like if they just do what they're supposed to do, take care of business against teams that don't look as good as them in at New Orleans and home to Atlanta. Now you're at 10 wins. You know, their position in the playoff seating right now is seventh, but it's a comfortable seventh because they're, you know, they're, what are they, 2 games? They're 8-5 and the next teams are 6-6. Like, it feels like things are pointed in the right direction in a way that they don't have to do anything exceptional or special. Just please go play the kind of football you played against Tennessee, and that should produce wins against certainly against New Orleans and Atlanta, I would say.
Well, the next best team, the Rams, got their 7th win, so they're 7-6.
Right, okay, that's right. That's right, because a little upset. But still, I do feel like...
I feel like two wins gets them in, yeah.
Yeah, and I also feel like we've never stood here in, you know, early to mid December and been like, oh, they're solidly in playoff position right now. They don't have to pull off any sort of crazy streak. Like, even the RG3 year, everybody remembers it as this wild, crazy ride that was like the most hope that the franchise has had in the past 20 or 30 years. And that's true, but it ended on a 7-game winning streak that they had to win the last game of the year against Dallas to clinch the division. Like, this is a much more kind of organized, structured, hey, we went, you know, we started 5-2, whatever it was. Like, it hasn't broken down. They've never been ahead of a season like this since those Super Bowl years. So it's just a different feeling. And it also feels like maybe that's sustainable year over year over year. Like, you're not 3-6 and we have to win 5 of our next 6 to get to put ourselves in position. They're ahead of the schedule, which is just strange around here.
Yeah.
Barry, thanks as always, man. Appreciate you hopping on a short notice, man. Thanks again.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Yep, that's at Barry's Verluga on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Sports columnist at the Washington Post. We'll take your calls next on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines, 800-636-1067. In the wake of the massive Juan Soto deal to the Mets, are the Nats going to start spending again to try to keep pace with the Phillies, with the Mets in the NL East? We'll take your calls next.